Up next, the Handy Guys wrap up our discussion on Paul's water heater leak. And also, we address Brian's deck and the material he chose.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, a podcast for handy guys from handy guys. Here are the handy guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
Okay, Brian, I want to know this week about the material, the wood you're going to use on your deck. And I realize it's more than one material, but I really want to know about that material that everyone sees, the part you stand on.
Sure. Do you want to cover that first, or do we want to?
We're going to talk about it.
Your water heater discussion.
Well, we're going to do both. We also need to.
What are we doing first?
Well, we'll do the water heater first, and then we'll address your deck, and we can throw the water heater in with all of our plumbing discussion. And along with that, I actually want to bring up some other piece of plumbing that I discovered, and we'll talk about that after you provide our contact information.
Okay, so just visit our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com, and on there, there's a contact tab. If you have any questions for us, you could just fill out that form or contact us the other ways that it shows on there. You can tweet us. We are at Handy Guys on Twitter, or you can just Facebook. We are facebook.com/thehandyguys on Facebook, and contact us that way if you like.
Got a project on your honey-do list? Let the Handy Guys know about it, and they may talk about it on their next podcast.
All right, first of all, I want to say to our listeners that Brian is actually remoting in this week, so you'll notice his voice is a little bit more digitized than normal.
Digitized? Is that how it's going to sound?
Yeah, it's going to sound a little digitized.
All right.
He's coming to us through Skype, which you don't always know the kind of quality you're going to get. But I want to tell you, Brian, as we discuss my water heater, hot water tank leakage, about every couple of years, maybe 2 years, it seems that one of the major manufacturers of plumbing fixtures comes out with some new latest, greatest space-age toilet.
You know, I read about a new toilet that was like, I don't know, $4,000 or $6,000, and it did everything.
Well, that's what this one does. It seems it's very similar to the last one I read about 2 or 3 years ago. But like I said, it seems to be this seems to be a normal occurrence. Maybe it's a different manufacturer this time. But Kohler, according to an article I read on digitrends.com, Kohler recently announced their new toilet called the Numi. And it's, according to this article, it's the fanciest toilet we've ever seen.
Is that the one that actually scrubs your behind?
Well, almost. It does have a built-in bidet, and you can direct it. So you can direct it front or rear.
front or rear.
I actually think they said there were 3 settings, but on the remote, I only see 2. But anyway, it comes with not only a heated seat, it's an adjustable seat so that I think it actually adjusts to your height automatically somehow. I don't know. It warms not only the
Does
seat.
Does it have like a control like your SUV, you know? You can raise the seat up and down and forward and back, and you can recline it.
Memory settings maybe. I'm not really sure, but it does have it actually not only warms the seat, but it warms the ground around the seat so that your feet are also warm. It has some floor-level vents.
So does it have like the button, you know, on some of these fancy cars where you have like you can program it. So button 1 is mine and button 2 is my wife's and button 3 is, you know, the kids.
Yeah, there's different user settings. Yep, it does. It definitely has different.
It does.
Yes, it has different user set settings. It says that it has a lid and seat that automatically open and adjusts your height. So as you sit down and it warms the ground around you, you can activate the retractable bidet, and it has it self-cleans, basically. It cleans itself and you.
Cleans itself?
Yeah, and that's not all. It also has, of course, a fancy remote control. And
where do you put the remote control, Paul?
I don't know. it quietly flushes after you're finished. It's very quiet. with an Echo Flush, I guess. It doesn't use a lot of water. And get this, it has an FM radio and MP3 player as well.
Like, can you plug your iPod into it?
Yes, it does. It has an audio input jack. Do you have to wash around that? Did the cleaning lady...
Where does the sound come from?
There are speakers on the back of it. And the weird thing is it's shaped. The way it's marketed, it's actually so space age modern. They show it like pictured in this sort of penthouse apartment that's all glass, and it's sitting essentially right in the middle of the living room. You know? So it's
now,
right
Paul,
out.
I never really had problems with the, you know, $100 toilets that, you know.
But you couldn't play MP3s. You had to you know, bring in another radio, and it didn't clean you. It didn't clean yourself or itself automatically. Of course, there you go. There, you don't need a cleaning lady for this. And it didn't have speakers. The one you had, right?
One I have, yeah, no speakers. But I guess I could put my my iPod, my headset on, and listen to the Handy Guys as I'm taking care of business, there, right?
Yeah, you can connect in and do that, or comes pre-programmed. So anyway. It's this crazy thing. And of course, it's going to cost you, when it's available, roughly $6,400.
Wow. Now, why? Yeah.
Now, Brian.
You know, it seems, you're right, though, Paul. It seems everyone is, you know, every once in a while, there's like some new take on the toilet.
Right.
You know? And they don't,
I just want a toilet
taken off, you know? Yeah.
Well, you know, I just want a toilet that doesn't clog. And the fact is what? The basic toilet... The methodology has not changed in many years. Now they've had to update it due to using less water, and they've changed a little bit, but still essentially it works the same with a bowl and a tank, you know, as it has for years.
Right, since the original. Who was the inventor of the original toilet?
Kohler?
No.
American
the guy's
Standard.
Name, the guy's name.
Frank Toilet.
Was
Bidet.
His last name was Crapper.
That's right.
I swear. And here's a little bit of the trivia for you, Paul.
Have you ever read Snopes there, Brian?
No.
Sounds like urban legend to me.
The hotel that Kate Middleton, now Princess Kate of whatever, you know, in England, you know
right.
who I'm talking
to, yeah.
right? Well, she stayed at this old fancy hotel the night before the wedding. Right around the corner from Westminster Abbey.
Right.
And it had an original Thomas Crapper toilet in it.
Holy crap.
Piece of trivia for you.
Well, I wonder if he knew Lord Sandwich.
Mr. Crapper and Mr. Sandwich. They had a good business going
yeah.
together, didn't they?
Put a piece of meat on some bread and there you have it. All right. Well, I want to talk about my plumbing issues. And
and it doesn't have anything to do with toilets.
Well, that's a whole other story. I could tell you about replacing a toilet, but that's another show. I want to talk about the other end of my plumbing system, which is down in the basement, away from my toilets. And, of course, this is a system that my toilets don't need. It's the hot water system. And we discussed last week how I noticed a leak from the
right.
pipe that descends from the the pressure and temperature valve, right?
TNP valve.
Temperature and pressure valve.
Yeah, temperature and pressure valve, right.
And I talked about how I replaced the valve, but that did not fix the problem. After about a week or so, I had put a little paint can underneath the pipe, and I noticed that it was full. Actually, it was about 2 weeks. So we're not talking about a lot of water. But it did fill up that paint. It was probably a few, you know, 2 or 3 pints or something like that, and who knows how much evaporated. But it did put some water on the floor, fortunately, into this can, and it's not something that I want to continue happening.
No, of course not.
So I decided I need to investigate this further, and you alluded to the fact last week in your story that there is another possibility here, and that is there's an expansion tank, or ought to be, on modern plumbing systems, and we'll talk about what that expansion type tank does and why you need it. We mentioned last week that most modern systems have a valve near the water meter that prevents water from reversing or, you know, going back into the city system, right?
Right.
What's this valve called?
It's called a backflow preventer.
Backflow preventer. There you go. I'm always forgetting it for some reason. Yeah, the backflow preventer. So what happens is you heat up your water and it gets very hot. And when you heat water, basic science tells us that it expands and it needs to go somewhere. So because they now put backflow preventers on a lot of modern plumbing, and whether you live, if you live in a newer home, you're very likely to have it. Even if you're in an older home, they often come along and put them on your system whether you like it or not. You have no choice in the matter if you have city plumbing. And I assume if you have a well water, you already have essentially a backflow preventer, or at least the pump prevents your water from expanding to some degree as well. And you need an expansion system with a well water system.
Right. And that's a whole nother topic right. of discussion. Those have very large tanks so that your pump doesn't come on and off, and that handles the expansion.
Right. So for city water, your hot water, you're heating your water, it expands, the water needs to go somewhere. So if you don't have an expansion tank, and when I did some research, I'm finding a lot of people don't. Because, like I said, they got this backflow preventer that was added to their system at some point, and an expansion tank was never added. The expansion tank is typically installed right above your hot water heater. And there's a little T-fitting, and it's essentially just screws right on. It's roughly the size of a basketball or something like that. It's not exactly the same shape, but that's about the size. And what it is it has inside a little rubber bladder, so that you can put air in the tank, and when the water expands, instead of pushing on your plumbing system or perhaps on your TMP valve, it pushes into that expansion chamber, and that allows it to the water to expand comfortably without doing damage to either any pipes or without putting more pressure on your hot water tank than you want.
Exactly. So the key thing you've said, Paul, is that these expansion tanks have they have a bladder, they have air in one side and water in the other side, and this bladder in the middle, so that the bladder can expand or contract as needed to maintain an even pressure in your system.
Right, Brian. So that bladder prevents the expansion, and everything is okie-dokie. Okay.
Well, it doesn't prevent the expansion.
It
controls the expansion.
Correct. It controls it, right. Yeah. It actually allows the expansion
right.
without causing any problems. So I thought, okay, so if my hopefully my valve, my new TMP valve is working, I better check that expansion tank to make sure it's working. Now, there could be a couple possibilities here.
Well, how do you check it?
Well, I'm going to talk about that. So here's the possibilities. One is that the whole thing has failed altogether, that it's no longer working, that bladder that it has inside is leaking, and the thing is simply filled up with water, and it's not doing its job. The mm-hmm. other possibility is that simply there is no air in it, and you need to put in a certain amount of pressure of air to allow it to work so that it actually can push back on the force of the water pressure. So here's how you check it. It has a valve on it, a little valve just like your bike tire, right? What's that valve?
Right.
You gave me the name of that valve.
It's called a Schrader valve.
Schrader valve, right. So it's the same exact size as a bike valve, and indeed you can use an air pressure gauge to check the pressure on...
Just like you check on your car tires.
Exactly. So then the next question is, well, what ought that pressure to be? Well, we'll talk about that. But first, I did a quick test to see what the pressure was on that expansion tank, and I found that there was no pressure.
It was zero. Huh?
It was not. I was not getting a reading on my gauge. So I determined at that point that either the tank was just faulty and not working, or it just needed to have some air added to it. And it turns out, after doing some additional research, that you can add air to this just like you add air to a tire. You can use a compressor or a bike pump, I suppose. The same method you use to add air to a car or bike tire is how you would add air to this tank. But the question is, what pressure, how much pressure do you put in this tank? Well, it turns out you need to put roughly the same pressure as your water pressure. So okay. You need to find out what your water pressure is. So now you're looking at a second gauge, and that is a water pressure, a gauge that checks the pressure of your water system, the PSI, or pounds per square inch, of your water system.
Okay.
And we've talked about this before on a previous podcast, I believe, but it is important to kind of have an idea what your water pressure is, or at least to check it every once in a while, because if it's too high, way too high, and in many modern homes, they actually will bring in very high water pressure to the house, sometimes over 100 pounds per square inch, and they have pressure-reducing valves in the home that bring it down to what is considered acceptable, which is usually 50 to 60 PSI. And if you don't, if what will sometimes happen is that valve will fail, that pressure reducing valve. So it's always good to know what your pressure is. So here's how you check. You get a water pressure gauge, and it's very similar to an air pressure gauge. It just has a bigger fitting that fits around a hose bib, or you can use where your washing machine connects. You want to try to get a fixture that's somewhere close to ground level or wherever the water comes into the house. That's where you're going to get your most accurate reading.
Okay.
In my case, I just use a hose bib and discovered that my water pressure was around 60 pounds per square inch, which is within the generally accepted limit, although that's different by municipality.
Okay. So then you add air equivalent to 60.
Right. So then you simply, exactly, I used my Makita pneumatic air tank that I use for tools. It adds air pressure very quickly. So I just had to do a couple quick squirts of air into the tank. I have a connector that I use for use for bikes or for basketballs, that sort of thing. So I added some pressure. I used my air gauge, which I picked up at a local car parts store for just literally like $3. And I just added air until it was about 60 pounds per square inch. So at this point, I've done that for a few weeks now. I have no longer have any more leaks. I will want to check on that from time to time to make sure I'm not leaking air. It's still possible, I suppose, that expansion tank is faulty. And what's interesting, Brian, is from reading and researching about this is that there are many out there that suggest that homeowners should check this tank. That should be something you check once a year, water pressure and the air pressure on your expansion tank. It's not something, not something you hear about when you buy a home, is it now?
No, like it's
owner's
not.
Owner's instructions.
And, you know, I've never checked my expansion tank, but I haven't had any leaking or anything like that. You know, I talked about, you know, sometimes it's overlooked. We talked about that last week that, so yeah, it is definitely a good idea to check it. And if you're having a leaky TNP valve, that may be the first thing you check versus just swapping out the TNP valve.
Well, yeah, if I had gone through this process again, I would have done it in reverse order. I would have done it, checked the expansion tank first. And, you know, Brian, I guess what happens with a lot of people is they call the plumber and have to pay the fee for the plumber to come out and do some of these basic things for them. But it's a shame. I mean, you don't get an owner's manual with a house, and this is something that has been added to the list of checks that a homeowner should do. You know, it's been added in the last few 10, 20 years, and it's not necessarily something that's commonly known. So you definitely want to check your water pressure, because that the valve that decreases your water pressure can actually begin to fail. I'm reading more and more that plumbers, it just assume it'll fail at 10 or so years.
Yeah, so, that's not good.
Yeah. So you want to keep an eye on that, and the expansion tank, you can check it once a year or so, and you might save yourself some hassle and some leaking water and some mold and that and other problems associated with the TMP valve which leaks. So there you have it. The leaky TMP valve solved, and it's actually quite easy. The nice thing is the parts to address this issue are pretty cheap. So not going to cost you a lot for these valves, the gauges that check the air pressure and the water pressure, are $5 or less.
So, all right, there you have it.
All right.
Everything about your TNP and expansion tank, they go hand in hand.
All right, up next, we're going to talk about your deck.
Don't know where to get reliable answers for your do-it-yourself projects? Why not search the Handy Guys Archive at handyguyspodcast.com?
So, Brian, decks are not necessarily exciting in a sense that, you know, it seems like everyone these days has a deck. But what I like to talk about is the materials you choose. And in your case, you made, as I mentioned last week, somewhat of a unique decision on your decking material.
I did, Paul. I considered all the options out there. We went to the Deck Expo in Baltimore.
Right.
We looked at all the different products. We looked at the various composite and synthetic materials,
which have PVC. Become great.
Yeah,
so they're getting really nice. Some of them.
Yeah, they're popular, and the latest generation of the synthetic products are pretty nice. The first generation, I think, had some issues, but then there's wood products. So the most common is pressure treated southern yellow pine or pressure treated Douglas fir in some areas of the country.
We talked about cedar.
Cedar, of course. And redwood is popular in some areas of the country. But I wanted to find something that looked like real wood and had some of the durability characteristics of some of the synthetics, but that actually didn't look like real wood, was real wood. And so as I was drilling down into all the different products out there, I'm going to say it. I'll let the cat out of the bag. I chose a product called Ipe. It's spelled I-P-E. It's pronounced Ipe. It's a wood that grows throughout South America. Brazil is a common exporter of this wood, and it has a lot of characteristics that I like for a decking. Do you want me to go through some of those?
I'd like to know. What are those characteristics?
All right. 100-plus years, it'll last. If it's left exposed to the elements with no treating whatsoever, it'll last 40 years. It turns gray. Like most other exterior woods, but it'll last 40 years. If you keep an oil finish on there every couple of years, it can last 100 years or more.
All right, let me follow up on that. Now, if you have a decking material that's going to last that long, will the supporting structure that, in your case, I know is pressure-treated wood, the framing, will it last 50 years?
That's a great question, Paul. And if you take certain precautions, yes, it will. Pressure-treated lumber will last 40 years, but there are certain areas that are prone to rot, even in pressure-treated lumber.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in a different show, we'll talk about some of the flashing details and considerations to really extend the length of that pressure-treated substructure.
Right.
But I think we're not going to have time to get into all of that on this show. So maybe in a next show or in a couple of weeks, we'll go over some of that.
So you're saying, though, properly installed, your supporting structure should last 40 or 50 years.
Right. And I'm talking properly installed, meaning beyond minimum code requirements.
Right.
So there's some things you can do beyond what is considered normal practice. Maybe what we would call best practices in installing that substructure.
Okay.
So it has to do with fasteners. It has to do with flashing and flashing beyond just where a deck may connect to the house, but also flashing around post connections and beams and joist connections and things like that. So,
okay. So it lasts
a
long
time. We'll just leave it at that.
It's the bottom line for a natural for a natural product. We're talking, this is what? Nothing lasts longer, probably, right?
Nothing lasts longer.
Okay.
Fire resistance?
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Carries the same fire-resistant rating as concrete.
It's like screwing into concrete, though, right? When you go to,
it is like screwing into concrete. It is extremely hard. It is extremely heavy, and a lot of, you know, you need sharp drill bits. You need sharp saws. You need to pre-drill all the screws. So there's a lot of aspects to it when you're using it that go into the installation of it. It's also very strong. Go ahead.
Okay, let me ask you this. Is it prone? It sounds like it's so hard. Is it prone to splitting?
Not if it's installed correctly, no. It does expand and contract like any wood does. Mm-hmm. And that makes it a challenge with certain fastening systems. And like any wood, it can check and split. So one of the things that causes checking is the, you know, when the end of a board, like a 4x4, let's say, starts developing cracks in the end, mm-hmm. that's called checking,
right,
in the end grain. And Ipe can do that as well. And the reason that happens is because the end grain absorbs and dissipates moisture at a different rate than the side grain.
Mm-hmm.
So when you cut Ipe, the recommended process is to seal the cut ends so that the moisture is absorbed or extruded from the lumber at the same rate on the end grain and the middle of the board.
Right. Okay. So,
that's an extra step when you're installing Ipe. An extra best practice is to seal those ends.
And does Ipe, if you oil it, I assume you can keep a consistent color. If you don't oil it consistently, does it kind of turn gray like, say, a cedar?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does.
Okay.
So it's like cedar, it's like redwood, it's like pressure-treated southern yellow pine in that respect, that the UV rays of the sun will turn it gray after a while.
Okay. And tell me about, I know it's very popular these days for decks to hide the fasteners. So you either,
yes,
screw from below or use some sort of fastening system to, whether it's composite or wood. How do you handle that with Ipe?
So Ipe supports a number of different hidden fastening systems. Some are specifically designed for Ipe. One of the issues with hidden fasteners, wood products in general, is that wood expands and contracts. And the hidden fastener, some of them just attach the board from the side and then down to your joist.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the wood contracts a little bit as it dries out, then your hidden fasteners or the boards between the hidden fasteners become loose, a little bit loose.
Hmm.
So the fasteners for Ipe that are hidden, the ones that attach in from the side, either into a groove or a slot cut with a biscuit cutter, the fasteners go in at an angle and hold down one edge of the board. So then if the wood shrinks a little bit, you're still anchored down tight to the joist on one edge, but you still might have a little bit of movement on the opposite side. So what I chose to do was to put screws in from the face, which is a common way to do most wood decking products. Cedar, redwood, pressure-treated lumber is to screw from the face,
mm-hmm.
and right down into the joist. That way you can get two screws on either side of the board, which you can't do with a hidden fastener. Now, what I'm doing is face screwing, but I'm pre-drilling the hole, and then I am putting in a matching Ipe wood plug to cover the head of the screw.
So it's still going to have it'll have an attractive finish.
Exactly. So it'll be almost a hidden fastener. You know, you won't see those plugs unless you look close because they'll blend in with the wood. And if you do see them, it'll kind of be a nice look. It'll be a very unique look as well. And all of the fasteners that you use with Ipe, because it lasts so long, has, you know, 40 to 100 year life expectancy, you're going to use the best fasteners possible, and that's stainless steel.
Okay, so let's tell our listeners, and we'll close the show with this kind of what they really want to know, and that's how much does EPEG cost compared to other decking solutions?
EPEG is going to be on par with the highest end synthetic products. Let's just put it that way. So,
it's one of the most expensive decking materials.
It's one of the most expensive options. Yes, okay. But it's not significantly more expensive than some of the synthetics. It's probably 3 to 4 times the price. Materials only 3 to 4 times the price of pressure treated southern yellow pine.
Okay.
If you're having it professionally installed, it may be 5 or 6 times the price because of the added labor costs.
But if you're doing it
yourself, if you're doing it yourself, then it's only your time.
Right.
Right.
Well, time is money. Even for me, maybe not for you, Brian, but for me.
Time is money, but you know, I'm taking my time doing it.
Right.
And we'll see. I haven't actually put any deck boards down yet, Paul. I just called this morning for my framing inspection.
Okay.
And I started putting in my posts and things like that, but no decking has been put down yet. So we'll see how happy I am with the tedious process of face screwing, pre-drilling, face screwing, plugging, gluing in plugs, and all of that.
Yeah, that hopefully, may take a long time. Hopefully by Labor Day we'll have this project finished so we can take some pictures.
Actually, I'm hoping by Memorial Day.
Yeah,
Paul. That's my goal.
Yeah, dream on. okay, well, that's great. So it's good that's coming along. And you, I think you also found that if you shop around for EPEG, you definitely get a significant variation on pricing. So you need to look for the best pricing you can.
You do. There's some online suppliers. I chose to go with one of those. And my local sort of contractor-oriented lumberyard carries it.
Uh-huh.
It's a special order product for them. But I found a better price online, and even with shipping, it ended up being a little bit cheaper.
Cool. All right. Well, that's all we got about decks. That's all we got about hot water heaters. But next week, we may have some more information on your deck project. And we're also going to talk about voles and moles. And voles and moles.
What's the difference between a vole and mole?
Well, we'll talk about that. And
all right.
And which one I had in my garden this winter, and also if we have time, plywood. It's something that handy guys need, but boy, is it interesting trying to find good plywood. It's a whole that could probably be a whole show.
So right. So that'll be coming up on our next show or the one after that. We'll talk about some plywood.
All right, that's all we got for tonight. Thanks for listening to the Handy Guys Podcast.
Thanks. Bye.
See ya.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.